Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening. And since I've had the time to process his death a bit, I want to honor Matthew Perry up top. As corny and on the nose as it may sound, I will miss my friend. I reached out to his assistant at the time, because this story had come out that his assistant, whom I thought I had met at one point, since further news has come out, so maybe she was the one that found him, or it was a later assistant, regardless, the woman I had met, seemed to be very close to him, a very close friend for years, and had saved his life at a certain point. And I remember meeting her at an apartment Maddie had in New York City when I had flown there to do comedy, but also to see his play. And shortly after his death, she responded and said, yes, it was her. And she remembered meeting me and then said that we will miss his gentle soul. And I agree. He was the most gentle soul. At his play in New York City, and I don't know, like 2016 probably, we were trying to schedule which night I'd come see his play, which he was so proud of, or if he'd come to my comedy show, but I was definitely going to go see his play. The plan was to watch his play and then have dinner afterwards. And I remember him leaving me a ticket and the security pushing me past the crowds of people that loved him because everyone loved him. And those people didn't know me, nor did I care, but that was a strange feeling after being ushered in and sitting in the audience and watching your friend pour his heart out on stage about a subject you knew to be so real and sobbing like a baby and trying to play it off as something that you didn't know to be as real as it was, but being also so proud of his beautiful performance and honesty, an incredible way to approach it. That was who he was. And afterward, his parents came up and it was the only time I'd met them. And honestly, to this day, I'm not 100% sure if it was Keith Morrison and his mother or his dad and his stepmom. His sister was there too. That sounds weird, but like I wasn't into true crime at the time, so I really didn't know who Keith Morrison was. I only found out later that that was his stepdad. And so 2016 me, if I would have met Keith Morrison, would have been real weird. Because I'd have been like, hi, Keith, can I call you Keith? Keithy? K-Town? What? So probably good that I didn't really know who Keith Morrison was at the time. But yeah, like, I mean, they were both, his dad was very tall and had gray hair. And Keith Morrison's very tall with gray hair. And it was a very brief meeting. So I don't know which one it was. I think it was Keith Morrison and Matthew's real mom. I looked back on our texts and I believe that that's who it was, but, you know, who knows? Regardless, my heart goes out to them, to the depths of my soul, because Matthew was one of the kindest, coolest, crooked-smiled sweethearts I'd ever known. And again, I know it's corny to say, but I will miss my friend. I'd known him for 15 years. He was my friend. I met him when he was 39 and I was 22. And that's a long Hollywood story in and of itself. But my other favorite memory was going to a hockey game with him and his trainer at the time. Probably in like 2009, but I don't know why the trainer was accompanying us. Maybe it was Matthew was on like a health kick. I can't quite remember, but Maddie had ordered a like cinnamon and sugar pretzel and he had spilled the sugar shit all over himself. And he looked at me and said, "I'm in a shame spiral now." And he did that with that same crooked smile, like, "Rach, I'm in a shame spiral." And I don't know if he was like, because the trainer's near here, or just like, shit, or he was just trying to make me laugh. I don't know. But admittedly, I've stolen that line for probably 10 plus years now because it always makes me laugh. So, Maddie, sorry, I've stolen the shame spiral line because it clearly is quite funny. Anyway, Matthew, I will always remember you and think of you, and your legacy is not only with helping the world laugh, but trying to help the wounded heal. And to my listeners, hey, wounding isn't something to be ashamed of. Matthew would want anyone struggling to keep fighting, and you'll come out on the right side. Maddie would want that for you. Fight the good fight, and feel no shame for the bumps in the road. The sky doesn't hold birds, so the sky can't hold the bad times you feel. They come and they go. The sky doesn't hold birds, and it can't hold you. And I love you guys. So I just wanted to, once I've slightly processed it, clearly not fully, because I can't stop crying, but I'll miss my friend. Well, now for the show. And trigger warning, this episode includes violence and thoughts of dying by suicide, so please take care when listening. So Jean is offered a job as headmistress at the Madera School for Girls in Virginia, which is a 5-hour drive away from Herman. So she was torn, should she be 5 hours away from the love of her life? But the love of her life was also essentially emotionally more than 5 hours away from her. Meaning, he was always so distant. They were in love, they were off and on, but he always had other women. So ultimately, she decided to take the job in Virginia, the one thing she did for herself. But from afar, she had to hear about Herman and Lynn's fabulous new love. If you'll remember at the end of last episode, we discussed that he starts sleeping with and dating his much younger assistant. So his new love with Lynn included trips with her, the one thing that previously had seemed only reserved for Jean. But now Jean was 5 hours away and so focused on her job that she couldn't be around Herman as often as she would like. But every chance she would get, she'd make the 5-hour drive to Herman's beck and call. Even though in her gut she already knew, she didn't have a shot at being his one and only. He was either getting closer to Lynn, pulling away from her, or both. She became extremely depressed. All she could think about was losing Herman. And the stresses of her job and the racing thoughts she had caused her much sleeplessness and anxiety. But also, due to the high dose of dioxin she was on, it made it even worse. And if her colleagues and friends knew that she was in emotional distress, they really had no idea that part of it was caused by the high dose of methamphetamines that she was on. And she also refused to tell anyone about her problems. She was always the lady. And this came into play in her trial. She was raised to be private. Never let anyone know that you're struggling or depressed. So, lack of sleep from the drug and worry made her even more paranoid. She would call Herman over and over again and not get an answer, and that would make her feel even more rejected and embarrassed. This cat and mouse game and torture and jealousy with Herman had been going on for over a decade at this point. In the spring of 1980, she was driving home from work at her lowest point, while Herman was at one of the highest points in life. He was busy on a press tour for his new diet book, The Scarsdale Medical Diet, while Jean was silently suffering and spending less time with him and seeing more and more evidence of Lynn around Herman's home, her lingerie, her dresses. They would sometimes be in plain sight in Herman's home. With the little time that she got to spend with Herman, she could not handle seeing that in the small windows of time. She was constantly reminded of Lynn being her younger, maybe sexier counterpart. But the final blow came when she was not invited to his 70th birthday party. Lynn was to be his date of honor. His friends planned a huge affair for him, almost like a black tie gala. It was to celebrate him turning 70, but also to celebrate one of the biggest accomplishments, his medical career with his famous book, and he was on TV appearances everywhere, constantly promoting the book, celebrities were talking about him, and he was becoming a celebrity of sorts of himself. And she was becoming more and more alone. Her two sons were grown, they were in their late 20s at this point. It was the loneliest and darkest she had ever felt. She barely got through the holidays, and when the spring rolled around and she found out about Herman's birthday, that was likely her final straw. But she was not going to go. She was determined, so she called his friend, who was planning the party, and he said that she didn't sound like her normal self. She was desperate. The friend did end up inviting Jean. And then Jean called Herman and insisted that she be by his side. And he said, no, we're all going to be at different tables. He was allegedly trying to mitigate any fights between the girls, any hurt feelings, or perhaps trying to make his night without any drama. Regardless, Jean saw this as yet another slight. Herman thought that this would be the only way that everyone could enjoy the evening. And Jean saw it as a huge slap in the face to both of them, actually, both her and Lynn. No one seemed as important to Herman as Herman was to Herman.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Around this time, she'd come back from a long trip for work where she'd visited Denver, Colorado Springs, Los Angeles, and more, where she was vetting new students for her high-profile
job as a headmistress of a school. But on that trip, she ran out of Dizoxin. She had taken that drug daily for almost 10 years. So to stop cold turkey when she forgot to fill her prescription was mentally and physically taxing. She called Herman to get more, but he said he'd just give it to her when they sell each other next. But with no plans to see each other right away, Jean, having to work, was forced to just push through and cold turkey drop off a drug. Around this time, she also wrote Herman an 11-page letter, ranting about all of the atrocities she felt she experienced from him. So on March 10th, 1980, that was the night that Jean decided that she was going to die by suicide. But maybe, just maybe, if she saw Herman, first, maybe everything would change. Maybe he would tell her he loved her and he was committed to her and only her, and Lynn was out. She had to see Herman that night. Maybe he would try to save her from herself, or maybe her motives were more calculating. We will honestly never know. But that fateful night came on March 10th, 1980. It was her fifth day without the drug. Jean drives 4 hours to see him to talk and perhaps present her desire to die by suicide, but after her drive, she approaches an unwelcoming home. No lights had been left on for her. According to court transcripts from the prosecution side, and with Herman's longtime homeworker on the stand, the night went like this. Suzanne van der Werken's recollection was aided by a book in which she recorded the names of Dr. Herman's guests and the dates on which they visited his home. She was able to provide a history of Herman's relationship with Miss Harris and her rival, Lynn. A gourmet cook, Miss van der Werken, had kept those records in order to avoid serving a guest the same meal twice. Miss van der Werken first met Jean Harris in 1967 at Herman's home. Jean then was a staple at the house, and she often accompanied Herman on trips abroad. She vacationed with him on holidays. And on one particular holiday that was very traumatic for Jean, that kind of led up to this fateful night, was in Paris. So in the fall of 1976, about 10 years into their relationship, Herman had whisked her away to Paris for a vacation. This was supposed to be their most romantic trip. They were going to rekindle their love. And it didn't seem like he was taking Lynn on any Paris vacation, so Jean finally felt like the more superior of the two women. That was until their first romantic night there. While Herman was in the bathroom, refreshing, you know, getting ready for the evening, Lynn found a pair of cufflinks. Cufflinks that he had said he had received from a grateful patient. He had lied. She'd never looked at them closely enough before, and this couldn't have been a worse time to have looked closely enough. She looked, and she saw that the cufflinks were engraved with Lynn saying, "Lynn, with all my love." And Jean went into a blind rage. She tossed a glass against the bathroom mirror and shattered it. But instead of yelling at her in retaliation, Herman actually just apologized to Jean. Always wanting to please Herman, though, and likely embarrassed of her outburst, she decided to let it go. So she fixed up her own makeup after sobbing, and then went about the rest of the trip, hoping that not a word would be spoken about it again. Number one, I believe that Jean didn't want to be embarrassed about this outburst, and the fact that Herman let it go was a win, and she probably didn't want to ruin the trip because she was always trying to constantly bury her jealousy, her sadness, and her hurt, and she would do anything to be the perfect woman for Herman. But as if things couldn't get any worse for Jean when they returned from their romantic vacation in Paris, her school told her that they had received another taunting call and that person that time left a callback number. Whether it was Lynn or not, there's speculation that it could have been, but it also seems that more people seem to believe that everyone was just as confused as Lynn was. So when Jean called the phone number back and Lynn picked up, Lynn seemed genuinely bewildered. But Jean wasn't buying it, though, and Jean felt that it had been Lynn this whole time. However, she had never recognized it as Lynn's voice prior to this. It seems that some person was making these calls who was trying to play some weird cat and mouse game between Lynn and Jean. And when she called the callback number, that was the first time Lynn was even aware of this. But then Jean became the perpetrator. At work, Jean would frequently get a callback number that turned out to be that of Lynn. The two women would end up screaming at each other over the phone. Lynn would change her unlisted number no less than 5 times over the ensuing years. But each time, Jean would get the new number as a callback. When Jean told Herman about this, he told her to just ignore it. But then he eventually took Lynn's side. And the night of March 10th, 1980, was the final straw for Jean. Jean remembers driving the 4 to 5 hours up to Herman's estate and finding no lights lighting her pathway. Although she does find that Herman was still sleeping, kind of endearing, she does try to wake him. But he says it's late and he can't talk, and she's trying to get some sleep. Disappointed, she tries one more time because she had a plan that night. She wanted a good farewell. Something to change or anything other than the pain that she was feeling. But when he didn't awake and engage, the pain only got worse. And then Jean started to notice all of Lynn's items, including Lynn's dresses, hair curlers, slippers around his room, as if she lived there. Jean then threw Lynn's curlers against an armoire mirror and it shattered. The mirror woke Herman up in a rage and he smacked Jean across the face. Jean was in shock but overcome with emotion. She then grabbed Lynn's jewelry box and threw that again with a loud crash. According to court transcripts, whenever Harris spent the night with Herman, she slept in his bedroom, according to Mrs. Vanderwerken. However, Harris was not his only love interest. Mrs. Vanderwerken testified that in early 1975, she became aware that the doctor was dating his employee, Lynn. As time passed, Lynn's visits to Herman's house became more and more frequent, and on various occasions, she was invited to spend the night. Like Jean, when Lynn stayed overnight at the house, she slept in Herman's bedroom. Although Herman dated other women after 1975, only Jean and Lynn ever spent the night with him at his home. With Vanderwerken's help, Herman attempted to keep the two women apart. When Lynn was expected, he would ask Vanderwerken to make sure that Jean's clothing and personal belongings were hidden away. When Jean was invited, the same would be done with any items belonging to Lynn. As Lynn's visits became more frequent, Jean seemed to become less so. According to Vanderwerk's book, Harris was a guest at the Herman home at least 63 times in 1977. In 1978, she spent the night on at least 49 occasions. In 1979, that number was reduced to 26. Despite Herman's apparent efforts to keep the women apart, it was clear that they knew about each other. Jean spoke with Vanderwerken often, and she would speak about Lynn often. And the rivalry was not always conducted on the highest level. In March of 1979, for example, Jean and Herman spent a week in the Caribbean. When they returned, Jean discovered that her clothing, kept in a closet on the first floor of Herman's home, had been ripped and slashed. Other than the servants, the only person in the house while Herman was away with Jean was Lynn. And Mrs. Vandervoorken mentioned this incident to Herman, but he kind of brushed it away. He took no action. And he continued on with his life. Herman and Jean then spent Christmas and New Year's of 1979 together in Palm Beach, Florida. Then in early February of 1980, while Herman and Lynn were traveling out the country together, Jean called Miss Vandervoorken to ask if she could mind arranging a small dinner party for her son David, who was getting married. Miss Vandervoorken replied that she would not mind, provided that Herman approved. The request struck Miss Vandervoorken as unusual, since whenever a party was planned, Herman would tell her about it, well in advance. He had mentioned nothing of a party for David Harris, but nevertheless, in mid-February, a pre-wedding party was held for David at the Herman residence. And Suzanne, which I'm going to start calling her Suzanne because Vandervoorken is very hard to say, she said it was a joyous occasion. And Jean herself was Herman's overnight guest on the weekend of the party. But she was not to return to Herman's home until the night of Monday, March 10th, 1980. So, at Herman's home, Suzanne was preparing a dinner planned for Herman, his niece Debbie, and Lynn herself. They had spent the weekend together, Lynn and Herman, at his home, and they had left early that morning, you know, having a good time, they were in a good mood, and they were making plans for another trip. And then, in late afternoon of March 10th, 1980, prior to Herman's return from work, Suzanne received two phone calls from Jean. During the first call, Jean simply asked if Herman was at home, and Suzanne replied that he was not. Sounding angry, Jean hung up. Jean called a second time and asked if there would be dinner and would Herman be there. Suzanne said that he would not. Apparently, Herman had told Suzanne to tell Jean that he was not home any time she called in the preceding months. Suzanne testified that on the evening of March 10th, 1980, Herman's bedroom was in perfect order. Lynn's nightgown, robe, slippers, and jewelry were still in the guest bathroom. When Herman returned home, he went into the living room and read the papers. He then went upstairs to change for dinner. His guests, his niece Debbie, and Lynn arrived together about 7 p.m. Afterward, dinner was served, and then they all celebrated Suzanne's birthday with a cake that Lynn had brought for the occasion. The weather was rainy and stormy, and the women left together at approximately 8:45 p.m. Some 5 minutes later, Herman went upstairs and went to sleep. Suzanne testified that ordinarily, when guests were expected at night, a light would be left on at the top of the outside steps. On that night of March 10th, 1980, after the dinner guests had gone and Herman had retired to his bedroom, the lights on the steps were out. Sometime later, he went to sleep. Suzanne decided to paint and watch television before going to bed, and then suddenly, at approximately 10:45 or 11 p.m., she heard the buzzer on the kitchen telephone. The buzzer was a device by which Herman would generally contact the servants using the attachment on his telephone in his bedroom. Suzanne was surprised to hear the buzzer because it was late and Herman had never called her at that time of the hour. As she walked toward the kitchen, she heard the buzzer a second time. She picked up the phone and she gave her usual doctor. She repeated the word twice, but the receive had no answer. Instead, she heard the sound of yelling, and she recognized Jean's voice. She next heard some banging, and then the sound of a shot. She never spoke to Herman again. Suzanne then ran to her husband's bedroom, who also lived on the property, and told him that she had heard a shot and that Jean was in the house. She said that they should go upstairs right then, but her husband said, "No, you heard a shot. We should call the police." So they tried to do so from the kitchen telephone, but it wouldn't work. When the phone wasn't working, Suzanne's husband ran outside to grab neighbors, anything, anyone that could help. And then he recognized a car as Jean's.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Her car was pulling away from the house. Suzanne saw the same thing from inside the house and noticed that the front door was now open. Police records indicate that the first call was received at 10:57 p.m. Suzanne raced upstairs to Herman's bedroom and saw him kneeling between the two single beds in the room. The telephone receiver was near him on the floor. His pajamas were bloody, and he had blood on his back. According to court records, as Herman lay on his back, Jean sat on the edge of one of the beds looking at him, as she had returned to the scene of the crime. She bent down, touched his face with the tip of her finger, and said, "Oh, hi, why didn't you kill me?" Meanwhile, other officers were arriving on the scene, and someone directed the woman to go downstairs. The detective then asked Jean for a full account of the events of the evening. She told him that she had driven up from Virginia with the hope of being killed by Herman. She then hesitated a second and said, "He wanted to live, I wanted to die." She hesitated again and said, "I've been going through so much hell with him. I loved him very much. He slept with every woman he could, and I had it." She then handed the detective a piece of paper containing a list of names. She said that she had recently prepared the list and that the people named were to be notified in the event that her wishes were carried out. She also stated that she had no intention of returning to Virginia alive. Describing the events in the bedroom, Jean said that she and Herman had a struggle and that the gun had gone off several times. She said that she had asked Herman to kill her, but the doctor had said, "Get out of here, you're crazy." They started to struggle again, and the gun went off several times. She admitted that the gun was hers. She said, quote, "I remember holding the gun and shooting him in the hand." She claimed she did not know who was in control of the weapon at the time, but she started crying. And she even asked if she could see Herman. The detective replied that he did not think that that would be a good idea. The trial eventually concluded with Jean's defense explaining her lack of medication. On Thursday, March 6, 1980, Jean exhausted her supply of medication. Over the weekend, she began to write a new will and also wrote a long letter to Herman. On Monday, March 10th, she completed the will and had it witnessed and notarized. She also mailed the letter to Herman that morning. The letter, which came to be known as the Scarsdale Letter, contained several disparaging references to Lynn. It also made reference to a dinner scheduled to be held on April 19, 1980, when Herman was to be honored by the Westchester Heart Association. Jean testified that Herman had invited her to that affair, but he felt that Lynn should be there as well. According to Jean, Herman did not know precisely what to do about this dilemma, which is why he put them at separate tables. So, when the so-called Scarsdale letter was presented to court, the letter was introduced as evidence by the prosecutor, and it was fairly scathing. Jean spoke of receiving a copy of Herman's will with her name vigorously scratched out, this is all in quotes, and Lynn's name in your handwriting written in three places, leaving her $250,000 and her children $25,000 apiece, and the boys and me nothing. Her letter continued, all I ever asked was to be with you. And when I left you to know when we would see each other again, so there was something in life to look forward to, now you are taking that away from me too, and I'm unable to cope. Lynn was pretty viciously described as a thieving slut, a psychotic whore, and a sick playmate. Jean also referred to a book near Herman's bed with a page marked, dealing with how, quote, an old man should have a young wife. And Jean wrote to him, it made me feel like a piece of old discarded garbage, but at least it solved for me what had been a mystery. What had suddenly possessed you to start your tasteless diatribes at dinner parties about how every man should have a wife half his age plus 7 years. Since you never mentioned anyone under 65, it made the wives of the table feel about as unattractive and unwanted as I did. She also said, I can't imagine going out to dinner with you and telling my dinner partner how grand another lover is. Heartbreakingly, in another portion of the letter, she wrote, it would have been heartbreaking for me to have seen less and less of you if it had been a decent woman who took my place. Going through the hell of the past 3 years has been bearable only because you were still there and I could be with you whenever I could get away from work, which seemed to be less and less. To be jeered at and called old and pathetic made me seriously consider borrowing $5,000 just before I left New York and telling a doctor to make me young again. To do anything but make me not to feel like discarded trash. I lost my nerve because there was always the chance I'd end up uglier than before. She then continued, you've been what you've carefully set out to be, the most important thing in my life, the most important human being in my life, and that will never change. You keep me in control by threatening me with banishment, an easy threat, which you know I couldn't live with, and so I stay home alone while you make love to someone who has totally destroyed me. I have been publicly humiliated again and again, but not on the 19th of April. In the apex of your career, and I believe I have earned the right to watch it, if only from a dark corner near the kitchen. I would further rather be saved the trial of living without you than have the option of living with your money. Give her all the money she wants, Hi, but give me time with you and the privilege of sharing with you April 19th. She said, every single moment in March, for Christ's sake, give me April. T.S. Eliot said it in The Cruelest Month. Don't let it be. Hi, I want to spend every minute of it with you on weekends. In these years, you've never spent my birthday with me. There aren't a lot left. It goes quickly. I give you my word, if you were just not so cruel, I won't make you wretched. I never did until you were cruel. And then I just wasn't ready for it. Jean Harris was eventually sentenced to 15 years to life and spent 12 of those years at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility in Westchester County, New York. But she managed to salvage that seemingly wasted period through a remarkable prison life. She counseled fellow female prisoners on how to take care of their children, and she set up a center where infants born to inmates can spend a year near their mothers. Then, after her release in 1993, following a grant of clemency by Governor Mario Cuomo, she set up a foundation that raised millions of dollars for scholarships for children of women in prison in New York State. In my opinion, Jean Harris is complicated. So was Herman Tarnauer. I don't really know what to think of this case, and I think that we will never truly know. But I think that Jean Harris was a distraught woman. She was in pain. She was depressed. She was on long-term drugs that she should have not have been on. And I think that Herman was a fine enough man, but I think he tormented her, and I don't know. It almost seems like both of them died of a broken heart. It's really hard to say, but it's a very complicated case, and it's never really been figured out if it was an accident, if she truly went there to go take her own life, or if she went there to take Herman's life, or if it was truly just a crime of passion that went awry. I don't know. But thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And I'll see you next week. Bye, guys. Love you.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.